This week's parsha, we're going to read a double parsha. We're going to read Vayaka Pekudei. And with that, we're going to not only finish our series this year, but we are also going to finish Sefer Shemot. So let's do a brief overview of the parsha before we begin. The parsha begins with the mitzvah of Shabbos, which we've already heard about previously. It's reiterated now. And the penalty for transgressing the Shabbos. Then it goes on to the materials that were donated and the actual construction of the elements of the Mishkan and the Kelim that were commanded to be built in Parsha Truma and Tetzaveh. And they're now actualized and being built this Parsha, or these two Parshiot, including the outer coverings and all the Mizbeach and all of the elements. And then it talks about the Kohen Gadol's garb, everything the Kohen Gadol has to wear, and the initiation of the Kohanim. And finally, Moshe inspects the Mishkan, makes sure everything's done according to how Hashem told him to do it. And finally, it gets built. It's finally erected. It's taken down and built and taken down and built for 7 days straight. Moshe is constantly building it and taking it down in the month of Nisan. And every vessel was properly placed. And the parsha of Pekudei ends, the Sefer ends, with God's presence resting comfortably in the Mishkan. Now, three parshiot in a row discuss the kiyor, the sink, the basin. And being that it's mentioned three consecutive times, and the Torah doesn't repeat things unnecessarily, we can assume that the kiyor must be laden with lessons to unpack. So in Parsha Ki Tisa, it says, "Vasita kiyor nechoshet," and the purpose of the kiyor is lerachza, and it should be placed between the ohel moed and the mizbeach. And again, "Virachzu Aaron uvanav mimenu at yedayim veraglayim." The purpose is to wash. Okay, that Aaron and his sons are meant to wash themselves before performing any of the avodah in the Mishkan. So this sink involved both a pedestal and a basin made of copper. And again, the purpose is for the Kohanim to wash their hands and feet before doing any avodah. Again, next time it mentions the kiyor in Parsha Vayakel. Vayaset ha-kiyor nechoshet. And it was made b'mar'at hatzavat asher tzavu patach ha'amoid. That the sink was made from copper, and it was made with the mirrors donated by the women. Okay, and lastly, in Parsha Pekudei, v'yasam et ha'kiyor bein ohel moed ubein ha'mizbeach le'itein sham ha'mayim l'rachta. Don't forget, this is where it belongs, and you better put water in it, because again, the purpose is to use it for washing. Now, this sink is mentioned three separate times. Two of the times, both in Parsha Ki Tisa and in Parsha Pekudei, the purpose of the sink is mentioned. It says it needs to have water in it. You need to make sure the basin contains water, because the purpose of the sink, it's not just pretty. It's a very pretty sink, but that's not its purpose. Its purpose is to be a washing station. Like, imagine if the shower is at the beach, you know, when you wash off your feet from the sand, imagine if they had no water. It's a pretty useless washing station, right? So it's reminding us, don't forget, you better put water in there. Right. Because it's to wash. We got that. Okay, but the second time it's mentioned, in Parsha Vayakel, the water isn't mentioned at all. And neither are the Kohanim. This time, the only added information we have is where the copper came from, the source of the copper that was used to create the kiyor. And the copper was donated by the women. So this information is obviously noticeably missing from the other two occasions. The other two times when it mentions the kiyor, it doesn't mention where the copper came from. And the third time, it doesn't even mention the materials. So clearly, it doesn't mention the source of the materials. Now also, the second time, when it mentions that the copper was donated by the women, the pasuk bears no mention of its purpose. It doesn't say it was made, you better put water in it because it's made to wash. All it says is it's made from the mirrors of the women, and it doesn't even say that it's for the Kohanim. There's no mention of Kohanim and their use of the kiyor. They're the only people who actually used it, but they're omitted from there. Now, Additionally, unlike the other Kalim, there are no dimensions listed for the size of the Kiyor. It's unclear how large it should be. Okay, so number one, we're going to ask some questions now. Number one, when any of the Kalim are created, the materials are mentioned, but their sources aren't. So it's just, we just assume it's from just the general donation pile that they're grabbing the stuff. It's not clear who brought what and why it was brought and by whom and for what purpose. It's irrelevant. It was brought by the Jews, and Moshe and Bezalel and Aholiab, they used it and they built all the Kalim. But when it comes to the sink, the Torah does mention the source of the materials. The Torah mentions that it came from the women. So why is it necessary to mention that? And why doesn't it mention the dimensions? And question number two, the Kiyor is mentioned three times. But the second time doesn't mention the Kohanim and only mentions the mirrors. Why is that? Why is it mentioned three times, but the second time it has different information? So of the last five parshiot that we read, of the last five parshiot in Sefer Shemot, four and a half of them, or maybe four and a third of them, revolve around the building of the Mishkan and the construction of the Kalim therein. Truma and Tetzava describe each of the Kalim, and then we have a break for Chayte Egel and Kitisa, and then again we pick up, finishing Kitisa and Vayaka Bekude, we're back to the Kalim and the construction of the Mishkan. So the parshiot of Vayakel Perkudei pretty much echo the parshiot of Truma Tetzava, except for one thing. The one exception is that all of the kalim are listed in Vayakel in Truma Tetzava, except for the Kiyor. The Kiyor is noticeably missing the first round of lists of all of the kalim in the Mishkan. And the Kiyor is only first mentioned in Parsha Kitisa, which is the same Parsha that the Chet HaEgel is mentioned. So question number three is, why is the Kiyor only first mentioned in Parsha Kitisa, but not beforehand in Truma Tetzava with the rest of the Kalim, when all of the other Kalim are mentioned both times? Okay, so let's begin by understanding some background information about the sink, about the Kiyor. When God called for donations for the Mishkan, the Pasuk says, Vayavohu ha'anashim al hanashim, that the men tagged along with the women. The women initiated and they schlepped their husbands along with them. This is in stark contrast to the Pasuk where in a stall tactic, before creating the golden calf, before creating the Egel HaZahav, Aaron tells the men, okay, perkunis me hazav asher b'nesheichem, grab the earrings off of your wife's ears. When it came to creating the golden calf, the men were very excited to create it, but the women were reluctant. So the men had to grab the jewelry from their wives. If my husband came over to me one day and said, we need your engagement ring, you know, that really pretty one that you love, the one you designed yourself and chose yourself and picked and agonized over, that one, we need it. We need it for religious purposes, okay? You can be sure I would refuse. I would refuse and walk away. That wouldn't be happening, okay? But the women refused to give their husbands their jewelry for the construction of the Egel, which makes sense. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're so spiritually inclined and that's why they refused. It could be that, you know, it's more likely it's not because of religious convictions, but they just really like their jewelry. I don't want to give you my ring. Okay, but with the stark contrast of the donations towards the Mishkan, we see that which we see in Parsha Vayakel, we know that it wasn't because of selfish motivations. We know it was, in fact, because of religious convictions that they refused to donate to the Egel. Because when it came to donating to the Mishkan, the women came running with their jewelry boxes. Here, take whatever you want. Okay, and the Ramban says that it was the men trailing behind the women. The women were coming with full of their jewelry boxes laden with gold dripping out of them, and the men were like schlepping their feet along. And the leaders, the Nesiim, Rashi notes that the word is spelled missing both yuds. It was spelled without both yuds, implying a rebuke for the leaders. That the leader said what sounds like a very generous statement. It sounds like a matching statement in terms of donations. You know, you guys donate everything. Whatever you're missing, we'll fill in the blanks. It sounds like a very generous thing. But That statement implies that they assumed the nation wouldn't give generously. They underestimated us as a nation. They assumed there would be big blanks to fill. And by the time they ended up giving, there was almost nothing left to donate. All there was left was the breastplate of, was the stones for the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. So the women, after giving all of their jewelry, they weren't done yet. After that, they donated their mirrors. And their mirrors were like, they were like sheets of copper that were hammered thin and polished very, very shiny to make them smooth and reflective. So when Moshe received this donation, he didn't want to accept it. This is going into the save it for later pile, right? This is not coming into my Mishkan. But God sets him straight. God tells Moshe, these mirrors are so special. They're so precious to me. You must use these mirrors. Moshe assumed that they're mirrors. They're signs of vanity. You look in the mirror when you're vain. And Moshe assumed they were signs of female beauty and vanity. That has no place in the Mishkan. That doesn't belong here. This place is a holy place. It's not a place of vanity. But God explains that these mirrors were the holiest of all the donations. These were the very mirrors the women used to beautify themselves back in Egypt. Back in Egypt, the Jews were so exhausted and spent, they were involved in backbreaking labor all day. They were in the darkest place in the world. And who wants to bring a child into that kind of world? The men didn't want their children subject to all that. They were too tired from their slave labor. But it was the women who realized that there would be no future of any kind, good, bad, or other. There is no future if there are no children. And they were sure good things were coming. And they wanted their children to share in that. So the women would beautify themselves using these mirrors to ensure the continuity of God's people. The Sfarno says that the reason that the cure isn't mentioned with the rest of the Kalim is because it's used to serve God, well, in a separate way than the other Kalim. Meaning the other Kalim are used in direct service of God. But the kiur is not used in direct service of God. The kiur is used in a preparatory service in order to serve God. So they were used to prepare, they used the kiur in order to prepare themselves to enter the Mishkan, to perform the Avodah Hashem. So in order to further, it's the same reasons that the mirrors were used in Mitzrayim. They were used as a preparatory act in order to further the Torah and to further God's nation. So the Ibn Ezra explains that it was more important that every mirror be used than it was to meet specific size requirements. That these mirrors were so holy that God specifically wanted them all to be used. And not only just to be used, but to be used specifically for the kiur. There were other uses for copper in the Mishkan, but the mirrors were used only for the kiur. And it was crucial that the kiur be composed of the women's mirrors. And because of the important message they teach us within the purpose of the kiur. So now we have to understand the message that's laden within it. The Meshech Chachma explains that each time the kiur is mentioned, its purpose is mentioned too. So the main function was to serve as a sink for the Kohanim to wash. We know that. Twice it says l'rachtza, to wash. But the other time, it doesn't mention washing. That time, it mentions the source, like we said. So the source of the kiur must be there to expand the purpose of the kiur. The kiur carried in it two functions. Number one, being made from special mirrors, that was part of its purpose. That was part of the reason it was there. And number two, obviously, for the Kohanim to wash. So how is being made from these special mirrors part and parcel of the function of the kiur? So the kiur was used for one other reason aside from the Kohanim washing. And that was for the procedure of the Isha Sota. Here are the basics of the Isha Sota procedure. If a woman secludes herself with a man other than her husband, and there are two witnesses, she's brought to the Kohen. Her husband points a finger at her, accuses her of adultery, and she's brought to the Kohen. The Kohen writes God's name on a paper. He burns the paper, mixes the ashes with the water from the kiur, and she's given it to drink. She's given a delicious Kool-Aid mixture. And now, if she's in fact guilty, her stomach is going to explode and she's going to die. Otherwise, she's going to move on with her life and she's going to get a bracha for children and happiness. And it's going to be, you know, to rectify all of the embarrassment that she just had to endure. Now, this procedure is wildly reminiscent of another procedure just done. In last week's Parsha, in Parsha Ki Tisa, the most famous national incident of idolatry occurs. The Chet HaEgel. The Jews had just received the Torah. They just heard the first two commandments from God himself, and they're waiting for Moshe to descend Har Sinai with the Luchot in hand, and to teach them the rest of the Torah. While Moshe is up on Har Sinai receiving the Luchot, the nation builds the golden calf. Upon his descent, Moshe comes down and he sees the nation dancing around a huge golden calf. He smashes the Luchot, runs down, takes the Egel, grinds it up, mixes it with water, and gives them a Kool-Aid to drink. Immediately, many of them die. Afterwards, there's a civil war and a plague for the remaining sinners, but we'll focus on the first part for now. It's not coincidental that the procedures are similar. What's the connection between adultery, between an Isha Sota and the Chet HaEgel? So the Kiyor isn't mentioned. Note, the Kiyor is not mentioned until we reach the Parsha in which we hear about the Chet HaEgel because of their innate connection to one another. So both scenarios above, obviously, they involve cheating. Okay, if you value a relationship, it becomes irreplaceable. After the most climactic spiritual moment in history, the Jews didn't know what to do with themselves. They wanted to relate to God, but they were afraid to relate to God. They wanted something physical to act as an intermediary. So they built the golden calf, the first form of Avodah Zarah. The term Avodah Zarah literally means the worship of Zara, of disconnection, because they wanted to separate themselves. They needed to take a step back. They were too afraid of this new closeness to God. Moshe served as that intermediary up until now. But where was Moshe? Moshe's up on some mountain, and who even knows? He's inaccessible. Who even knows if he's going to come back? They were petrified. There was pandemonium ensuing. So they created a golden calf. They created a new intermediary. It was coming from a good place. But the problem was, Moshe is described as having aspaklaria mi'ira. He was transparent. He taught them Torah. He taught them everything without detracting anything from their relationship with God. He was their bridge to God. He was like a mirror of God. But the calf was a separation. The calf separated them. It created a distance between them and God. They were so afraid of the closeness, they didn't know how to relate. So all they could think of was to just try and distance themselves, to fill the space. And the Mishkan was the rectification for the Egel because of that. God says, I see you need something physical to relate to me. I understand that. I get that you're physical beings. You need to relate on a physical level. But that physical thing should be a mode that is that enables us to become closer to one another, not brings us further apart. And in fact, one of the major differences between Truma and Tetzaveh, where the list of the Kelim are recounted, and Vayakha Bakude, where the list is then repeated, is we see a refrain in Vayakha Pekude, Kasher Tziva Hashem Es Moshe, over and over and over again. Just as God commanded Moshe, just as God commanded Moshe, they built this. Just as God commanded Moshe, they built that. Throughout Vayakha and Pekude, that's what we see, because the Kelim were built just the way God had commanded, because this was the way that God says we should fill the gap. You want to get closer to me. You don't want to go further away from me. So let's bridge the gap, not create a barrier, and not do it with something superficial. Rabbi Leib Kelman describes it like this. The distance is created in a two-step process. The first, he says, is that if you value the externals, that's step one, valuing externals. And step two is inevitable. If step one happens, step two is close to follow. Step two is looking for a replacement. Valuing externals is just viewing things for the benefits, for what you get from it. And if you don't get any benefits from it, well, then you move on. If you really value a relationship, the relationship can't be replaced. But if you value it for the benefits and the gain, then it's very easy to replace. Once those benefits become greater somewhere else, then the first place is useless to you. So the Jews experienced tremendous closeness with God. They were so afraid. It was moving too fast. And yet at the same time, they didn't want to lose that closeness. So what they did was they filled the space with something superficial, with the ego. And similarly with the Isha Sota, the married woman was accused of having an affair. If she truly valued the relationship with her husband, which has the potential to be one of the holiest and greatest relationships possible, she wouldn't try to replace it with superficial means. Moshe saw that they were on a slippery slope. He sees that they were trying to bridge that gap. He sees that they were valuing externals. They already made this breach in the relationship. And the obvious next step is to replace the relationship entirely. And that's when he springs into action. The Isha Sota is specifically brought to the Kiyor in order to teach her the lessons laden within it. She's a woman who has a breach in her relationship with her husband. Whether she's guilty or not, certainly if she's guilty, but even if she's not guilty, clearly there is a breach in that relationship. The question is, did she try to replace him or not? Is she guilty or not? And the Kiyor is specifically made of mirrors of the women from Egypt who beautify themselves for their husbands. And those are laden with lessons to teach us. The first is that they're created from mirrors. Mirrors are reflective. Often when someone points an accusing finger, all they need to do is just look in the mirror to see where that finger really belongs, who that finger should really be pointing at. If the husband feels his wife is cheating on him, whether she is or isn't, he should probably ask himself how he is contributing to that relationship. She most likely didn't wake up one day in the most amazing marriage and just decide to have an affair or tempt fate and think about having an affair. Both husband and wife need to be introspective and look in the mirror to see how they got to that point. But just because he isn't there doesn't make it okay for her to stray. There were plenty of excuses to give in to Znus and Mitzrayim. Egypt was one of the most morally depraved societies. It was the most morally depraved society. The men were never home. They were always working, slave labor. When they were home, they were physically there, but they were exhausted. They were mentally spent. They were wiped out. Yet the women still had held strong. The women did the opposite of what would seem to be eventual in such a morally decrepit society. They did the opposite. They beautify themselves for their husbands. And what a message to the Isha Sota. Relationships are a two-way street. Both partners need to make the effort. And lastly, even though things seemed dark in Egypt, the women beautified themselves in order to build families. Even if things aren't going well, you have the ability to move past it. You have the ability to work on it. The women of Mitzrayim, they built for a future that really didn't look promising. They didn't know there would be any future that was worth building towards. And this position of being accused of adultery, that's an all-time low. But there's only one way to go from there. You can only go up from rock bottom. So the Isha Sota is told to take a cue from the women of Egypt. They lived in the darkest times. They lived in the most morally depraved places. They lived under slave conditions. And look what they did. They still tried to bring light into the world. So now let's answer the questions we started with. Number one, when any of the other kalim are created, the materials are mentioned, but their sources aren't. Why, when it comes to the sink, does the Torah mention the source? Why does it mention that it came from the women of Egypt? And why doesn't it mention the dimensions needed? The source of the material used for the Kiyor, the copper that was used, the mirrors that were used, were part and parcel of what the Kiyor represented. It represents hope and closeness and strength in dark times. And every last mirror was necessary. It needed to be used to convey this very message. So the dimensions were irrelevant. It could be as big as you need it to be, as long as you use all those mirrors. It was the lesson there that was crucial. Number two, why is the Kiyor mentioned three times, but the second time doesn't mention the Kohanim? Instead, it mentions the mirrors. The Kiyor is mentioned with its purpose each time. It had a dual purpose. One was to cleanse, obviously, to cleanse the Kohanim for their avoda. But another and just as important purpose was to teach the lessons to the Isha Sota. The only other time the sink was used was for this procedure. And lastly, why is the Kiyor only first mentioned in Parsha Ki Tisa, but not beforehand in Truma and Tetzaveh, along with the rest of the Kelim that were all mentioned in Truma and Tetzaveh? Because the Kiyor isn't mentioned until the Egel is mentioned, in order to teach us the intrinsic connection between the Chet HaEgel and the Isha Sota. Had you not picked up on the Kool-Aid procedures, at least pick up on this, right? The Torah is giving us like flashing lights. Look this way. It's a clear intrinsic connection. A relationship needs to be deeply rooted. It can't be superficial. And superficiality is a huge red flag for the demise of the relationship. Once you're in it for the looks, you're going to end up replacing it for something more enticing that comes along. So before I take any questions, I just want to thank you all so much for giving me the opportunity to learn with you these last couple of months. And if anyone has any questions.